If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
Yeah!
Hey everyone, welcome to the Completely Unnecessary Podcast for Tuesday, June 9th, 2020. It's actually Bill and Ted Day. 69 dudes, that's Ian.
Pat's trying to tell me that eating barbecue before an overnight red eye is a good idea.
It is in San Diego Airport. I'm Pat Contry. On the podcast today, we'll be talking about lots of fun stuff. Game Gear Micro, the best idea we've ever heard of. An update on the Atari VCS and the lawsuit, Pac-Man Championship for Famicom, a Sim Refinery, and more, and good stuff. And yes, Ian does like going into my refrigerator and then pointing out I have too many sides from takeout and delivery.
I was chilling my beverages, and I opened the fridge, and Pat has a stack of 14 side containers.
Did you actually, like,
I just counted. And 14.
Well, I said, like, when you get a Raglan burger, they give you like six right there.
They do.
When you
get. It's good sauce.
And it won't go bad right away. Anyway, Ian, how was your weekend?
I mean, all things considered, it was fine.
Okay.
Well, I have a doctor's appointment on Wednesday. That's really what I'm focused on. So I have a doctor's appointment tomorrow, and we'll see what they say about my neck. As far as my weekend, it was pretty good.
We'll talk about Saturday night later, playing some games.
It was good. Vani and I played D&D again on Sunday, and we're having a blast with that. Just having a real good time. And it's nice to escape from the real world for a while.
That's true.
And I played a lot of, we should probably just talk about it.
No, we shouldn't, because I have an order for some reason on there.
You asked me what I did this weekend. What I did this weekend was play Clubhouse games.
Okay, fine. We'll screw up the whole order. I had a whole thing planned about how I'd go through this for a reason, like updating my hair. Week 17 of my hair, Ian. It's now desperation level with my hair, because now it's not growing down like your hair does. It's just growing into my eyes, and I think it's taking control of my prefrontal lobe at this point. My hair, it's just like controlling.
I think so too, since you're so concerned about the order here.
I am, because we also got to talk about, hey, we got enamel pins, we got a limited t-shirt at ultimatetano.com. check it out, and books for sale. I also want to announce this, and I didn't know how to announce this before, but now I figured out a way to make sense with everything going on. I started a Cameo account. So if you don't know what Cameo is where you can record personalized messages for people for like their birthdays or anniversaries, or if you want to break up with someone. And I've done a couple of them so far. Go to cameo.com/PatContry if you want me to do that. And all proceeds, net proceeds from this month of June, I will donate towards the American Civil Liberties Union if you want me to do a cameo. So it's out there. You can get me to do a personalized message with the hair, you know, and whatever you want. I would love to try to break up with someone for you, even as a joke. I think it'd be funny to do that. So again, cameo.com/PatContry. Do you want to talk about Clubhouse games, Ian?
Yeah, I want to talk about Clubhouse games.
It's the game of the year.
I don't know.
Clubhouse games.
Yeah. For me, Streets of Rage 4 is still in the running for game of the year. But Clubhouse games is exactly what I expected it would be. It is a collection of 51 games, most of them done well. Some fairly bare bones, but the important part is the variety, the fact that the online so far has been good, which is not something that you normally expect from a Nintendo product when it comes to online. I really like how they've set up online, and we'll talk about that in a little bit.
They got the net code going.
And Pat and I, we played some games together. What was that?
Saturday night stream. On my Twitch.
I was just sitting on my couch, playing back. But what did we play? We played Moncala.
We played checkers. We played Chinese checkers.
I fucking hate checkers.
You did not do well at checkers at all.
We played
Renegade.
Renegade.
We played toy boxing. We played toy tennis.
And toy baseball.
Which I'll talk about that, how difficult it was to hit the baseball in that. It's easier to hit a real baseball than to hit that baseball. Anyway, and we played Connect Four, or whatever they call it, four in a row.
Yeah, I misfired a shot there.
Is that why I won so easily?
That's why I just started stacking them in the middle. Oh, okay. I was like, yeah, I was just like, the way I hold it when I'm doing the touchscreen is I kind of hold it like that, and I grip, and my
use touchscreen for it. Okay.
Yeah, and my finger like went around the top and dropped a piece. I was like,
the Pro Controller. So I went to Target and got my physical copy because Amazon wasn't mailing it out right away, even though I pre-ordered it a week ago. So I went to Target, and online it said that they had them in stock, but there weren't any on the display. So people were buying them. So I had to ask the guy behind the counter. It was funny. He didn't hear the game before. The guy working there. He's like, "Oh, what is that?" And I'm like, "Oh, it's on the Switch." And I was like, "He's like, okay." So he saw there was none. He went to the back. He got me one. I feel like saying you should have brought them out because there's gonna be more people that are buying this. It's because, you know, the front display probably holds like 20 of them. I'm guessing, and those are gone. So I got it. I tried it before I played with Ian, and I love the presentation of the game. I like the little figurines. There's four characters, and they're goofy, but the voice acting is very well done. The interactions, you can skip them, but when they explain the games, it's kitschy, it's cute. I actually tweeted at the woman who plays the black woman character figurine,
mm-hmm.
and because she said, "Oh, this is out now, so it was my dream come true to like voice a Nintendo game." I'm like, "Oh, it was like good for you."
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, and the big meme was like, "It's time, like who wants the ball? Go bowling!" Like I guess that's the thing when you hit play bowling. She says,
"Oh."
So it's very, like I said, it's goofy interactions. It's the two adults and the two bratty kids that sounds like a cartoon from the 90s.
Yes, the kids drive me crazy.
They're like, "Oh, you but it works. It gives it personality. I don't mind that. And it's a good intro to the games. Obviously, some introductions of how to play are better than others, but you learn as you go in these games, and a lot of the games have hints. Or like what you should do, like you give little hints. So.
Yeah, for instance, Renegade. If you wanted like if you want to use hints in Renegade, it'll show you where your available moves are. If you use them in dominoes, it'll like highlight the domino. You know, stuff that for online it doesn't ruin the game, but stuff for online it helps keep the games moving at a reasonable pace.
I didn't try it for chess when I played chess against a computer to see like what hits or what you could do. I would guess that being that there's 51 games, there's no way that they could properly, you know, design a proper hint system for all of those games.
No, but some of them they really did a good job. Like I want to mention the Ricci Mahjong, because that's the type of Mahjong that I play. It's not the solitaire Mahjong, it's the four player Mahjong that's like a card game. Mm-hmm. And it's a very, very complex, difficult game to learn. And one of the things they do is you can press a button when you're playing and it'll actually look at your tiles and it will help you. It'll like suggest hands that you can go for. It'll kind of like help you learn what to look for when you're playing.
Okay.
And make it, because there's like, Jesus, how many hands are there in Mahjong that you can memorize? I think there's like 35 hands or something like that. So it's very helpful to have that. So I feel like they put the effort into the games where it would require it the most.
What I like about this game, and this is something you will not get on maybe a system where the games are $3 to $10 each, is that they belong in obviously the same universe, these games.
Sure.
They look like they are done by the same company, obviously, because they are the same developer. But the graphics and sound design are excellent. I mean like the falling of the whatever they are, checkers and the Kinect
before
four,
that, I noticed that too. I'm like, it sounds like they mic'd up a Kinect four and they played it.
They like foleyed it, maybe the sound.
Yeah,
the Moncala dropping the little seeds.
Yep.
Sounds like crisp.
It's very, very pleasing to listen.
It sounds like you're playing a real game.
Yep.
I can't explain until you play some of them, but it's spot on with
the sound of the pieces flipping in reversey is like really satisfying too. Hearing all the tiles go as they flip.
Oh yeah, that's right. Yeah. I mean, these are things that you don't notice.
The dominoes hit with a satisfying click.
Oh, like, I didn't play the dominoes. It clicks nice.
Yeah, like they it's very well done. If you miss the sort of like clean, sterile. It's weird to miss it, but I guess. But if you miss like the Wii era like design from Nintendo,
this is
very much a return to like that Wii era design. The music sound, it may even be composed by the same person. I have no idea, but the music sounds like it would have fit on the Wii Shop channel. It's very pleasant.
Yeah, it's inviting. Mm-hmm. So I played through. I probably played half the games between playing myself and Ian. I played the Mastermind Logic game. Was fun. That's just like that's just single player. Though. I don't think that's multiplayer, right?
But you can play it. You can play it multiplayer. Basically, you pick the code and you just hand it off to someone.
Oh, okay,
yeah.
You just double up there. So there is a lot of games on here that we spoke about before that you wouldn't have to include it on here in order to have a successful product. But they really said, okay, this is basically your new Wii Play in almost Wii Sports. So, like, the tank game is excellent for what it is. Even though there's only three stages, it harkens back to, obviously, the Wii Play tank game. It's a little more complex, and it looks better, obviously, because you can do the shots forward, and also you can lob the shots.
You lob the shot.
And plus, there's the team tanks, which we should have did team tanks. We didn't even
do that.
You
can't do team tanks online for some reason.
You can't do that one online?
No.
Damn it. Well, because I think it's 41 out of the 51 games you can play play online, or 40 out of 51.
Yeah, the solitaire games, obviously, you can't play online, and then, like, I think there's a couple four-player games that you can't, anything where you have to team up, I don't think you can play online.
I don't think you can play slot cars online. I don't believe.
No, I don't think you can.
Which is fine. I mean, it's such a quick experience anyway, and that's actually more fun than it looks. When you play slot cars, it's literally one button: accelerate and stop accelerating.
Yep.
And it works very well. And you have to feel for when you're going to be going too fast around a curve, or else you spin off.
Sure.
And what's interesting is they did the you can create your own up to three tablets, put them together, create your own race, which obviously I didn't try. I didn't try the shooting gallery. That's it's literally the Wii Play shooting gallery. I didn't try that. The toy games work very well. They feel good. The boxing felt right. We played the boxing real quick. They're quick games, though. But baseball, I had problems with. Baseball, I played against Ian. I'm not saying Ian's a maestro at this, but I managed to hit the ball to play like twice, I think, in baseball. It's tough. The ball goes really, really, or the whatever pinball goes really too quickly in that, and it is hard. I played Norm before at Slugfest, you know, in the Williams machine, and you do have to get used to the timing. But that wasn't like this. This was like you have less than a quarter of a second to react and to hit it. It's quick.
I was hitting fouls no problem, but I mean, getting a good hit was difficult. In three innings, I hit two triples. I think toy baseball is actually one of the most disappointing for me because I love that style of baseball game. I actually have a game on my Switch just called Desktop Baseball that is essentially just that because I love playing that shit so much.
I did fine versus computer.
My beef with it is it's important to keep ball... it's important that being able to, like, strikes and balls are an important thing in that.
Sure.
And while it gives you all the options to, throw, it gives you the options for a curve, a slider, a fastball.
Curve, screwball, fastball.
And a changeup. It didn't seem to matter. Like, there was no... The way that the strike zone and the ball and the way that was all set up, it didn't seem like it was ever really effective to try to go for a ball or something like that. It takes... It basically... No matter what I threw at you, it may have been confusing looking or it may have changed the speed up, but you could have hit any of those.
Well, I thought I swung through a few. When you threw the slow ones, I waited for them and timed them.
Sure.
And it wasn't connecting. It seemed like it... Maybe it's off a teeny bit. It didn't seem like I connected when I should have a couple of times. But they can correct that in an update. That's not a big deal. They can...
Sure.
They've already come up with a couple of quick little updates.
Have they?
Yes. It's up to like 1.1 or 1.11. at this point. They've already done some corrections. That's the bad part about when you're doing 50 games, it's hard to pay attention to all of them to the same extent.
Sure.
It looks great, though. The sound of the spring and everything, like, that's all great. That's what I was going to say. The disappointments to me from what I saw was some of the AI. But I did not play through all of them. Like, maybe you played the AI I played Shogi. I did okay. Moncala, I did okay. Nines Men's Morris. I didn't like that game. I'll get into why later, but it's not for me. But when I did the baseball game versus computer, whenever they batted from the, I think it was the left side of the computer, if I threw it away like a screwball, they always swung at it and couldn't connect. They like backed up. The AI was off. They couldn't lay off of it. But they could hit it if they went forward, but they went back. So there's definitely some AI issues here. If you play multiplayer, you'll probably be better off. When I played the computer at chess, I think it was supposed to be beginner or normal. I tore through it like the computer wasn't even a remote challenge. It was bad. It was like a first grader playing someone. So
meanwhile, if you play the computer in Renegade, normal may as well be impossible mode, and impossible mode may as well be normal.
And Renegade's a fail to everyone.
Yeah, I mentioned that in I did a little bit of a writing on it for the Patreon. But yeah, across, and it's just because how you have to program, of course, AI for all these different games. But the AI is incredibly uneven across all the games.
Sure.
The difficulty as well.
I'm trying to think of other ones. What is it? The six ball drop game. What is it called?
I think it's literally called like six ball puzzle or something like
that. Yeah, that's a great game on its own. Like that was seemed like that you wouldn't have to include it, but that was like
I didn't play it, but it looked kind of like Mermaids of Atlantis or Bubble Bath Babes.
Well, you drop three, but the balls settle. They don't stick. They settle.
Gotcha.
In. So the physics are pretty good because the first couple times like, oh, I'm gonna get this combo, but then the ball just slid slightly off. I was like, it screwed me up. And you can do combos. And I think if you try to set up certain patterns, you screw your enemy. Like, at one point, I was playing the computer, and they just dropped, like, all this garbage on my side, and I was done. Very polished games. It's like, how many of these games, though, are that deep? That's the only issue. But again, it's 51 games. They don't have to be deep. So for example, the toy golf game, which is very, very well done.
Is it? I didn't
for
play
that game.
One yet.
It has 9 holes. Maybe they could have done 18, but it has 9. So it's like, okay, it's better than nothing.
Sure.
But that game... You only get 3 clubs. You get a driver, you get like a wedge or iron, and you get the putter. It's like close to NES golf, just in the concept of how it plays.
Sure.
You pick out the club, you see the distance, and you don't have to, you worry about the wind, you don't have to worry about slicing it, thank God. You just worry about the power of your hit, and you do it. But even the graphics for that are pretty good, like the water effect's really good for that. Did you try the fishing?
Nope, not yet.
You did not try the fishing? Oh my God, Ian.
I keep forgetting about it.
Oh my God. There's too many games to play.
There are. What I do with Clubhouse games now is I turn it on, I go to online, I pick Domino's, Renegade, and Moncala, and I just wait for a game.
Moncala is really fun. Really fun.
I can't believe I didn't learn how to play Moncala until I got Clubhouse games.
I didn't
and
know
now
it's a
it's,
game.
And now it's like all I play on.
Moncala's really good. I was disappointed by Nine Men's Morris, whatever. I was disappointed by the rules because I figured out how to play it by the second game. But then basically Nine Men's Morris, if people out there, you get 9 marbles for each player. You have to do 3 in a row in a lateral, horizontal or vertical to get a point, a mill. You take a marble from your opponent away. The board's set up with 4 sets of squares, and each square goes inside each other. And you place the marbles one at a time, and then you move them. When the opponent gets down to only 3 marbles left, they can't just move them one space anymore. They can hop any marble anywhere. So I was way ahead of the computer at that point. I think I was up like 7 marbles to 3. And when that happened, when they got down to 3 marbles, I was screwed. And they managed to catch up and to do a draw. And at that point, I'm like, well, the rules, either I don't know how to play this really still, or the rules are so tilted where you have basically a second set of rules that come into play near the end. I didn't like that at all. I was disappointed in that. Hounds and Hares should not have been included. I'd like to say that game is too simplistic and dumb for Clubhouse games. That's the one, to me, that should not have been included. That game's a joke. And it's not just a joke because it's extremely impossible to win.
Yeah.
But you realize after like 3 moves you can't win. You can't trap. If you do 1 move out of place, if the hare knows what they're doing to not get trapped by the 3 dogs, it's a stalemate, and that's what happened. Like, this is a it's a garbage game.
It's a garbage game.
I don't care how old it is or how it should not have been included at all.
I would say the same for War, Takoyaki, and Pig's Tale.
But some people like War for whatever reason.
Sure. And I do need to go back to, I think, something that Pat said real quick before I launch into these being bad. There's a lot of games on here that I am never going to touch again. But the fact of the matter is, 51 games, I'm not buying it for 51. I was buying it for about 10, and anything else is a bonus.
Yeah, I would say easily half of these are, at least to me, very replayable. At least half.
But Takoyaki is literally all luck. It's just an interesting card setup. It's literally 10 spaces. 10 spaces for the other person with cards. Then there's a deck of cards in the middle. And you pick one. And you put it in that space, and you flip it over.
Okay.
And then whatever card that is, you can keep, like, popping the cards over.
Okay.
But there's literally no skill. It's just a matter of how lucky you are pulling the card off the top.
Kind of like the fast card, the spit version they have there,
Speed's a little different.
That requires skill to push
it quickly. Speed's different.
Gotcha.
Pig's Tale is literally... if you pick a card and it's the same suit as the card that you just picked, it goes to the next player. Or you pick, like, they're
kind of like Uno a little bit.
These are worse than Uno. Okay. These are just absolutely like dog shit games. I would say that the card game selection was a little questionable.
I didn't try the solitaires. I mean, it's hard to screw up solitaire.
Yeah. Sevens is fun.
We didn't play the two ones we should have done. We didn't try darts or the bowling.
Yeah,
I heard they're good.
I'm not in a position to be doing motion stuff. So.
From what I saw from the darts, it looked pretty damn accurate moving the Joy-Con, and you saw the dart move.
That's cool.
Before you did it. So that's good. The biggest disappointment to me, and I knew I was going to be disappointed by it. They had to include Hold'em, Texas Hold'em. They had to include a poker game. I wish they didn't now, because it's a Nintendo kiddie safe version of Hold'em. So the way the Hold'em works in this game, and I was flabbergasted how disappointing it was. Again, they can always update the rule sets or add more. That's a good thing about this. Nintendo, with the stuff they publish, they're going to have updates that are going to come out. Hell, they could add more games if they want to, or variations.
The way the 51 looks on the title page looks like it's just waiting to change to like 52 or 54
or 59 or whatever.
They made the art very easy to change if need be.
I think they're going to do that. Not just for that, but the fact that like when you play like chess, for example, there's a lot of games have what, easy, normal, hard,
and impossible,
advanced or whatever, and impossible. There's like four or five modes. But there's not a lot of different options between. I cannot change, for example, you know, my game board look. I can't do that. I only can change black, white, or random to start, or the computer, you know, and that's it. But they can add on. Here's the problem with the Hold'em. The problem with the Hold'em is that it's four players, which is fine. Hold'em's usually up to nine. The problem with Hold'em is that maybe there's different options. It's only five rounds. These, like, they don't want you playing there for hours for whatever reason. It's five rounds. Whoever has the most chips win, and you all start at 100. The issue is that it's not even, if you know what no limit is or pot limit, it's an artificial limit, Ian, where you can bet, I think you can bet five, but then you can raise, but you cannot raise more than that on each street. So the issue is this. You cannot bluff in this version. Because you cannot put your opponent at risk.
Right.
You can stay in every garbage hand you have. There's no reason to fold in this version of Hold'em. You can't really bluff people out. It pays to stay in. It's not Hold'em anymore. And I'm very disappointed at that. I understand why they did it. Because Hold'em can be very intimidating if you play someone that's very aggressive. You can't be aggressive in this version at all. This is literally like a luck game now. This is almost like rolling the dice. This version of Texas Hold'em. It is. I won one hand. When I played, I won one hand because I hit an ace and three two pair and won a lot of money because I kept staying in the pot when they shouldn't. And after that, I just basically folded the last few hands and I had way more chips than the other three person. It was impossible to come back. So again, disappointed in that. But again, people aren't going to be buying this to play Hold'em. I think people, if they really want to play Hold'em, will get a pack of cards and play it. But the good news is that they can probably add this on. I mean, they could increase it, you know, increase the options later. Hex was interesting. I could not wrap my head around the strategy of Hexto, but I liked it, where you have to get your pieces to the other side mm-hmm. of the board, and it's all hexagonal strategy. Maybe the key is to do like a circle, create like a circle.
That might actually, yeah.
Now I'm thinking of that.
Did you play any backgammon?
No.
Backgammon is a great game.
And I should, because I never learned how to play it. I should play backgammon. Is it cool with the shaker? Does it feel like it?
I actually haven't played backgammon yet, because I want to sit down. Because every time I love backgammon. I think I've told the story on here before. If not, when I worked at a country club, it was always really, really slow at the beginning of the month during lunch. And because basically the way a country club works is they have to spend a certain amount of money every month. So they do less of it at the beginning of the month and they do more of it at the end of the month. So when it was slow, the bartender, who I did not get along with, we hated each other, but she kept a backgammon board behind the bar, and we would, I don't know, tersely play backgammon with each other during lunch. We'd sit there and play. So I love backgammon, and I relearned the rules like probably about a year ago, but I always need brushing up on them. That's one that I really wanted to check out that I haven't
yet. That's the good news yet. Like, I had a good time, and I didn't play that. I only played one game of the Gomoku, which is the five in a row Othello, basically, on the board, the little black and white board. That's a fun one. I didn't play Karam yet. I didn't play, well, I don't know any Mahjong. I didn't play any of that. I didn't do bowling yet. I didn't do air hockey yet, which seemed fun. So I haven't touched like 15 games still, and I think it's worth it.
Yeah.
Just from the ones I played, I think it's worth it. Dots and Boxes was interesting. It's all about, I guess it's almost like, Connect Four. You don't want to do the third side, but there's like a really big, like, planning stages of Dots and Boxes. And yeah. Then it all comes together, and I somehow won it. But I did not know the strategy. Like, I knew enough, like, okay, I should probably do this, but, like, that one was weird to me.
Dots and Boxes was a classic game, family road trip game.
Was it?
Yep, my mom and I used to play it all the time. She'd pull out a pad of paper and a pen and just make the grid, and we'd just pass it back and forth.
I didn't even try Yacht Dice. I forgot to try Yacht Dice. I heard the shaky sounds really good for the shaky.
I played Yacht Dice online and remembered that Yahtzee is just an incredibly painful and unfun game.
Well, it's randomness. I mean, it's just like, yeah, you could say, well, it's a good strategy if I try to keep three or go for the straight or whatever, but that's it's randomness plus.
I had a problem with Yahtzee. I had the app. I even wrote about it once on the Patreon. I had the Yahtzee app, and it was such a tire fire of an app that I couldn't look away. And for like 3 months, I played Yahtzee on there with people, and I don't think I'll ever play Yahtzee again.
Last card was almost Uno. It's not Uno, because there's not draw four. There's draw three. So there's a draw three. And is there a draw two? Like, because Yahtzee, excuse me, Uno has draw four and draw two when you get the wild draw four. So I guess that was the way around it. Draw three they had.
Sure.
I guess it was draw three and draw two. But yeah, you had to hit a button on your set when you have two cards left to put the card down. Again, that's mostly, there's a little bit of skill, but that's mostly luck of the draw in Uno. But it was a fun game. I played it just against the computer. Again, you're playing what? I think it's four players. And I think I won it somehow. But that's like luck. So, yeah, check it out. I think for $40, it's well worth it.
Sure.
If it was 60, I'd be like, $40 is well worth it. And again, I think they're going to have a lot of updates with things, with like little...
And I think it's going to do well. I saw a lot of people on my friends list playing it. It people who... Like, I actually... bought it for my friend Audrey. So Audrey you've met Audrey, John's girlfriend.
Okay, yeah.
Her and I, before they moved, her and I used to get together once a week to play board games. We'd play chess, we'd play, you know, all sorts of stuff. And I wanted to teach her backgammon at some point, and then they moved, and now obviously with the COVID they're not getting out, so I bought her a copy of that so we could play board games and stuff again. But I bought her the digital copy, and John told me, she was like, oh, I was looking into this. She doesn't pay attention to games at all, but she had heard of this, and turns out John had actually ordered her a copy. So yeah, so he's just gonna have to return the physical copy.
There you go.
And even like people I wouldn't expect, like my friend's son. Him and I are friends on there, and I saw him playing Clubhouse games last night. And I'm like, all right, so
this could be like the little midlife resurgence of the Switch to like a new audience, almost like they're like kind of. You know what I mean? Like,
sure,
they're expanding out to that Wii sort of hyper casual audience that would not have paid attention to some of these games. Like if Nintendo, I haven't seen them promoting this on. They're promoting like buy a Switch on Twitter, promote a post, even though you can't find one. You'll sure. find a Switch Lite. But if they start advertising this, like on TV, and I think they're gonna. Let's put it this way. I will not be surprised if this has sold already. Like you know, a few million. You know. Maybe like 5 million within a couple of months. Like I won't be shocked by those numbers.
Sure.
It's not going to be like Harvest Moon, maybe.
You mean Animal Crossing?
Animal Crossing. I always put those two names together. It won't be like that, but I think this will have a long shelf life.
Yeah.
I think this will be the game that for people, future people that get a Switch for the first time, hey, $40 game, let's grab it.
Right.
Like how 1-2 Switch should have been, mm-hmm. not $60 for that as a throwaway tech demo game. Like this is not a tech demo game. This is a nice little package. And plus the piano. Ian can play his little synthesizer. And I saw you can double up for more keys.
You can triple. Yeah.
You can triple.
You can do three.
You get your nice little Nord lead synth, red synth. That's basically what it was modeled after, right?
I think that's what the look wise they were going for, yeah.
But the sound is close, wasn't it?
Sure.
Come on, you got the fact that I even know that, you gotta be impressed by. I was into my synth. I had a Yamaha AN1X synth in college.
Oh, nice.
That was sorry. Anyway. I've been following a little Deep Space Nine, following up, watching it. I'm into season 3 right now with Deep Space Nine. And I talked about Ian on the phone about just how good, you forget how good Deep Space Nine is, Star Trek, until you really get into it. The characters are so much better
right.
and interesting than Next Generation. Because all the characters are don't like each other from the on the surface.
Yeah.
They're all different personalities. Like Miles O'Brien, like the blue-collared engineer, just hates Bashir, the like upper-middle-class, like kind of yuppie... a doctor. Then they get along eventually. But, you know, there's a lot of tension in between. Like there's like class tension and people just don't like each other because of the politics of what's going on. And Garak, who's a recurring character, who's the Cardassian tailor, who ends up he's actually an ex-spy. I told Ian I didn't realize it, and people that watch Deep Space Nine will know who Garak is. He's played by Andrew Robinson, who was Scorpio in Dirty Harry. And if you've not ever seen Dirty Harry before, and people, yeah, it's Dirty Harry, it's Clint Eastwood, yes, but that movie works because of just how fucking creepy and psychotic Andrew Robinson plays Killer Scorpio in that movie. It's that's how a killer would act.
Yes.
Like it's really creepy. And yeah, anyway, so check out Deep Space Nine if you haven't. Real quick, Ian, I watched the 30 for 30 Be Water with Bruce Lee. I don't think you watched it, but you did say that you know a little bit of Bruce Lee. I was surprised.
Yeah.
It was good because it was more like a biography. Because there are documentaries about that focus on obviously his martial arts skill and all the things he used to train.
Right.
How he trained so hard, he like broke his back. That stuff was not even almost mentioned. Which was disappointing a little bit. I would love to have learned a little bit more about, if you don't know why Bruce Lee is so important to martial arts, and it's yes, because he helped popularize martial arts in the West in the late 60s, early 70s. It became a pop culture phenomenon and brought a lot of the Asian culture to us. Bruce Lee was way ahead of his time in terms of fiddling and mixing with different martial arts together, and that was not a thing that happened. So he realized that things that he was trained in Wing Chun, Kung Fu, and realized that this is not the end-all be-all. There's other things I can learn from Western boxing, from Judo and Jiu-Jitsu, and from even fencing techniques in terms of stance. So he combined all this stuff together. And that was looked down upon by the establishment of martial arts. He drew the ire of the Chinese traditionalists for teaching Westerners, even though I talked to my friend Yoshi, they said that it happened. It was a little bit blown out of portion with legend, but they were not pleased that he was teaching, you know, white Americans, you know, and black Americans how to do some of the stuff when he came over here to California and I think in Seattle too. So that stuff wasn't really focused on. It more focused on, you know, discrimination in a larger picture about, you know, starting with, you know, Japanese occupation. And then it went into all discrimination in the U.S., how he bounced back and forth between, you know, Hong Kong and the U.S. And when he wasn't accepted as a full Chinese person when he went back because he was here. And then he was never accepted in the U.S. He was discriminated against here. You know, he never got roles here. You know, he portrayed Kato for Green Hornet. Wasn't paid. He was paid like a fourth of what everyone else was paid, which was like, wow. Nothing. When he was like, you know, he was a co-star of that. And a lot of people watched just for him. They basically built the role around him because they realized, what do we have here? And then, of course, the most famous thing, which one of the biggest missed opportunities in entertainment ever was that, you know, Bruce Lee came up with the idea for Kung Fu. And then they said, oh, we don't want you to play it. We were not interested. And they ended up doing it with fucking David Carradine. And I like David Carradine, but if it was Bruce Lee in that role, holy shit, that show would have been amazing.
Yeah.
Kung Fu. That would have been an amazing show. Frank loves that show. I said, imagine if that was Bruce Lee. He's like, yeah. I was like, yeah, it would have been legendary. No one really talks about the original Kung Fu that much. If it was Bruce Lee, it would have been amazing.
And then my dad loved that show.
Then obviously he goes back to, you know, Hong Kong. He does his, well, four and a half movies, four movies that were released. And unfortunately, he dies because he takes the pill to whatever it was, it was like a pill to help with his headache. And he had a bad allergic reaction and his brain swelled and he died. So it was a biography. But it got into his philosophy a bit. It didn't really get into how much he knew about philosophy, how much he learned. That would have been interesting. But no, it was 30 for 30s are great because ESPN, obviously, Disney has the money to like go all out. And they had footage of stuff that I hadn't seen before in documentaries. Like, I didn't know how much of a child actor Bruce Lee was. That I did not know. I thought he dabbled, but like he was in a lot of movies.
I didn't know that. I knew he messed around a little bit, but I didn't know.
He was in a movie as a teenager where he basically plays like a ruffian. And then he was a child actor. That's when he was born here, San Francisco. Almost immediately went to China with his parents. And his parents were his father was in show business, so got him into it. Then they came back here. He went back and forth like three times. It's a great documentary to check out. And they even had people, obviously Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, they re-interviewed, but they had a few of his early friends and students so that's why, like, wow, this is probably what you don't see in other documentaries. His Chinese girlfriend from when he was like late teens, early 20s. So it's like, it was interesting to hear, you wouldn't hear from these in a typical documentary about him. Like the people that actually knew him personally. Obviously, Linda Lee, his wife, and then Shannon, the daughter you had there. So it was interesting. I check it out. The only thing I would say about this documentary is that it was all B-roll and photos and footage. You never saw the people speak. So it was hard to keep track of who was speaking after a while because it would show it on the screen, but it's like if they showed them in person, you'd have a better connection to the people that knew them. And even it was like one of the producer people that helped him, I think, on Enter the Dragon or something in the 60s, who's now probably like in his 80s, they even interviewed, was still alive. So it was check it out if you like Bruce Lee at all. And I won't get more into Bruce Lee because I can go on for like an hour about how a genius he was. He basically wrote a book, the Tao of Jeet Kune Do, which shows his scribblings and him, you know, theorizing, analyzing all these different moves from different martial arts and how that can be effective. And from talking to my friend, it's like a lot of that is still taught today, those principles.
Sure.
And even the ones that they've perfected started from things that he thought about then. So, anyway. And any thoughts about good old Bruce?
No, I mean, nothing that you didn't really cover. I mean, I always enjoyed watching his movies growing up, and when I was a teenager, I read up on him and basically the same stuff that you talked about, you know, about he had trouble fitting in
anywhere.
Everywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it didn't help that
sad story.
And it didn't help that he married a white woman.
Yeah.
Like that didn't that and he was one quarter, I think, European. I think one of his grandparents was European. So that probably the other people didn't know, but he didn't have an easy life. It focused also a little bit on the fact that how he didn't have a personal life and how that affected him a little bit. So
right.
Things you wouldn't typically hear about. Whenever you hear Bruce Lee, you hear of like this god. You don't think about like the man himself.
Right.
So it was interesting. GameStop, Ian.
Yes.
Real quick, they reported their quarter one finances, which for them is February, March, and April. So obviously, once you hit March, you get into the store closings a lot. Wasn't good. It probably wasn't going to be good regardless, but it wasn't good. So their net loss is somewhere between 162 and 172 million for the quarter. They closed 76% of international stores, all U.S. stores temporarily in response to COVID-19. And then the actual financials will be fully announced, today. So we can probably look it up. We'll just say it's around 165 million.
Yeah. Wow.
They were hurting before, but now it's like...
Well, they're not giving cash right now.
For stuff?
Yeah.
Just all credit?
It's credit. And I don't know if... I mean, I'm sure that if you were to ask them, they'd probably spin it somehow for COVID. But
they don't have any money.
They don't have any money to give. They're offering like a one penny for Xbox 360s, but they're selling them for like $80.
What is it? 360 go for at your store?
Right now, about 80. It depends on the model.
So the price is fine, but they're just not giving any money?
It's, yeah, they're just not giving anything for them.
I guess credit would probably be something.
Nope. And I think it was like a penny for credit, too.
What were they trying to say then? We don't want this stuff at all? Or we're just going to
I don't know. They're definitely hurting, though. Like, it's not
more than
good.
They would have been.
Yes. They're in bad shape.
Obviously, a lot of businesses are suffering. But for an organization like GameStop, you think that with how long they've been in business and with how they operate, that they could have sustained being the stores being closed for even 2 months. And it wasn't even... I mean, yeah, 2 months for most locations, but that's it. Maybe a little over 2 months. Like, it's just amazing that it's like not just circling the drain, but now it's a quicker circle of the drain. That's basically what's happening here. So, wow. Total global sales for the quarter expected to be down between 33 and 35% from $1.5 billion last year.
Wow.
And comparable store sales are expected to be down 30 to 31%. Excluding stores that were closed, store sales are expected to be down 16 and 17%. Wow. Okay. Not much more to say about this. I mean...
No.
I gave this, what, another year? Or a year and a half before they closed for good? I think with this, I don't know if they're going to last till the end of this year.
Yeah, I think it would be... Yeah. I think they'll hold on. I mean...
They got a lot of stock they can liquidate, though. Who's going to come buy all their stuff, I wonder?
I think they'll try to make it through at least the next system launch, but that's...
You think so? But they're not. But what if it's only limited quantities anyway? They can't sell a lot of them this holiday season, which probably they won't. It's going to be a slow rollout for these next systems.
I mean, it's going to... What they're going to see is that not even like... This is when they should typically start seeing a lot of business again, is when new systems roll out. And I think they're going to realize that that's just not going to happen anymore. And I think that will probably be what puts them 6 feet under.
You think those Amico pre-orders, the Galaxy Purple, is going to float them?
No, I don't think that's going to float them.
Oh, that's a shame. All right, well, that's it for this long intro, I suppose. This topic, though, Ian, happened right after the last podcast came out, and I was very, very disappointed we did not get to discuss it.
Yeah, because I was just talking about... I was talking during that Sega topic about how Sega has made some bad choices in the past.
No, it was during the Atari segment last year about the Atari Raspberry Pi.
That's right.
You said, well, Sega used to make bad decisions
like that,
like 10 years ago like this. And I'm like, okay, that's interesting, Ian. I wonder what examples there are. And then that night, Ian, we get, I guess, the surprise announcement that Sega was going to be touting or
well, there's
something.
There's a different announcement, but... They announce, so they put up like this teaser image for a Game Gear Micro, and it looks very small. And I'm like, there's no possible way it can be that small. It's like rusting in the center of the palm of a guy's hand. But I'm thinking, okay, maybe that's not the actual size. Maybe that's a big hand. Maybe it's
Andre the Giant.
Maybe whatever. What kills me about the Sega Game Gear Micro, so the Sega Game Gear Micro is coming out. Right now, it's a Japan-only product. It will probably only ever be a Japan-only product. It is a keychain-sized Game Gear that comes with four games on it. But there are four colors, and there are four different games per
four
Game
sets
Gear.
Of games.
And they are retailing for what will be about $45 US.
I think they'll probably edge up to 50. They come in here, but we'll just say $45. Oh my God!
I can't begin to start where it's wrong. And the thing is like. Minor changes in any direction could turn this into a product that I would have interest in. If it was like 30 games on one, I might try to deal with the size. If it was 20 games on something that was smartphone size that I could hold, I might try to work with it. If this stupid product was $20 instead of $45,
and the same size, only four games,
I might actually consider it. But everything is wrong with it. Every possible thing they could have done wrong, they did.
They went in every wrong direction possible. On the design, on the number of games, on the price, every direction they miscalculated, not just a little, grossly. To make this an absolute joke.
Yeah, it's
this
just,
is a joke product.
It's insane. Sorry.
Your little Pac-Man Tamagotchi's going off?
Yeah.
When I first saw this, I was like, oh, this will be like, you know, like, a GBA micro-sized.
I was literally expecting something this size.
It's just like a little, like GBA micro almost.
With 40 games on it. That's what I was expecting.
40 games on like an iPhone size.
And I was excited. Because I don't have, everyone knows, anyone who listens to the podcast or has followed me for any length of time knows that I love portable games. I love portable systems. And the Game Gear is one of the few that I've never really given a fair shake. So I was excited to be able to finally dive into the library for what I assumed was going to be a reasonable price.
The screen size on this is barely over an inch. It's 1.15 inches.
Holy shit.
Are you for real? Are you for real? Are you for fucking real? And that's diagonal.
And they have the balls. One of the Game Gear minis.
Are you for fucking real?
Is three strategy RPGs.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's it's Shining
fun,
Force.
That's going to be fun reading all that.
Yes, it's three strategy RPGs. And then I think it's like maybe it was the... I think it was like the Game Gear Shinobi or something like
In
that.
In comparison, the GBA Micro, which is suitable, is 2 inches. That screen.
But lots of people are like, that's too small.
If they had done a GBA micro screen size, just 2 inches, it would not be a joke anymore. I would be like, okay,
yeah,
this is a joke. It's a joke for the number of games being different in all four. If they said, we're going to give you 16 games, Ian, we'll give you 16 games, but you can have one of your four colors, I'd be like, okay. That's semi-reasonable. That's like a couple bucks a game. Even if it's a joke size, some people will that.
Put all the games on all the systems.
You talk about the cynicism of nostalgia and retro mini consoles.
Yeah.
We thought we saw it with how bad the PlayStation Mini was, with how bad the emulation was and the choice of games. This blows that out of the water. Like, this is insane. And the fact that they had los cojones, Ian, to then offer a 1-inch screen, but say, we're going to sell you the Sega Big Window magnifier in order to actually play these games. And yes, they had something like that for, I think, the original Game Gear, but the original Game Gear wasn't an inch. Like, this is...
Oh, and I think I read, and I could be... This is potentially... I believe you have to buy all four to get the Big Window.
Oh, is that what someone said? I read that. You had to get all four to get that?
That's what I read. Was like, yeah, you buy. I think the Big Window came if you bought all four or something like that.
The original Game Gear screen was 3.2 inches as comparison.
Excuse me.
Which was pretty big at the time. That was a pretty good screen. They couldn't even do 2 inches? Like, to make it useful? Increase the size by 100%. How much would that have cost you, Sega, to have a 2-inch LCD versus a 1-inch? What did you save? A dollar per? I mean, this is unbelievable. Like you said, if this was $20 maybe as a keychain, maybe.
Yeah.
I would have done it. Because you can't play these games for a long amount of time, I'm guessing.
Right.
How much could... What's the charge? Do we know what the charge is on this? Or battery, whatever it is?
I have no idea.
Watch. I guess it's probably a watch battery, right? What powers this stupid thing? Game Gear Micro Power. What was that in the article there? Oh, two AAAs or USB micro power adapter. So you can't charge it. You got to use batteries or just have it plugged in.
Okay. Cool.
There you go, Ian. There's your Sega for you. It was like right on... right on. What was
the, I jinxed it?
What was the bigger announcement? Was it the Fog Gaming thing?
Yeah, so I don't quite understand it, but they're doing. They want to do some sort of like they're calling it Fog Gaming, I think, but it's like some sort of cloud gaming arcade thing. Sort of arcade tech.
Let me do some pat math here. If you want to get all 16 of these games, we'll just say it's going to be $45-$50 US when it comes out. We'll even say 45 times 4. And then what, you get like a fifth color one if you... There's like a fifth model I saw that's a different color. Whatever. They are charging you $11 a game. They're charging you... that's usually when it comes to these micros or minis, you say how much per game? $11 per game you are paying.
It's nuts.
For games that... Sega has a library. They could have easily did 30 games, 30 Game Gear games. They could have put on Shinobi... You know, they put on all the Sonics. You know, there's plenty of Sega games without even doing third party they could have done. And they could have put 30 on there, charge you $60, and made a Game Boy Micro size, and I think it would have sold gangbusters.
Yeah.
I don't picture anyone... What's the market for this, Ian? Like, what is it?
People with too much fucking money.
Are there Sega fanboys out in Japan that'll just buy this? Buy all four of them?
I guess.
And never play it? Like, how would you play it? How can you play Sonic on a screen that small and keep track of it? Like, how could you do that? Or, like you said, the RPGs. How are you going to do that?
Yeah, I have no idea.
You get the big window and strap that sucker right onto it. like, this is... The only thing I thought of was, like, remember Nintendo had the LCD keychains of like Donkey Kong, they came out like 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But those weren't $45. They must have charged probably $10 for those.
They
things.
Were $20. I had one because
I have one somewhere.
They were just basically redos of the Game and Watch games. I mean, they worked fine. They were,
but it's fun. Like you said, $20.
I think they're $20.
That's what a keychain should cost, like maximum ever.
Yes,
but that's how much LCD games cost. So you get that
right.
This is insanity. I would love to know what the actual production costs of these are. I would love to know. If they told me, yeah, it costs us $25 to make these, I'd be like, okay, then you should have probably made it bigger to justify the cost at that point.
Sure.
Because the screens don't cost anything anymore, right? Like that. If you, 1 inch versus 2 inch, like someone out there in the comments tell me how much it costs for a fucking 2 inch LCD screen. It cannot cost that much more than a 1.15 inch screen. It can't. It absolutely cannot, because how many things use a screen that small to begin with? You know that, and probably I know that they don't really make squared off 4:3 LCDs anymore. They're all widescreen.
Yeah,
and then they just
mask chop them
yep. basically. So this is nuts, Ian. I don't think I'm overreacting. I think this is insane.
It is. It's wild. It's fucking crazy.
So you have no inclination of getting the Sonic one. And you're just like, I don't want anything.
Not at that price, no.
If it was 25, maybe.
If it was $20, I might get the blue one
just to have it,
just because it's cute. Sonic, literally throw it on my keychain. But yeah,
they managed to make something that's not a keychain anymore, but not a real product you can use.
Yes,
they found this Twilight Zone, retro Twilight Zone of nothingness, which I don't think we've seen before. I'm like almost impressed that they managed to do this. It's like you had to set out to make and market and price something this off. In order to appease no one, really. Did you see anyone excited about this on Twitter?
No,
or anyone?
No, I didn't see anyone.
I thought people were going to come at me because I was you know, anti Sega. I was like, this is insane to me. And no, everyone was like, no, this is insane.
Yeah, no, it's right. Absolutely nuts.
It's absolutely nuts. Okay, Ian, do you like hair on the head?
Big lustrous locks.
Looks good. It's ornamental, and it keeps you warm. Well, did you know 2 out of 3 guys will experience some form of male pattern baldness by the time they're 35? Well, the good news is that with today's advancements in science, Keeps offers proven treatments that can combat the symptoms of hair loss and help you keep the hair you have at half the cost of your local pharmacy. You don't have to go broke to avoid going bald. Keeps offers generic versions of the only 2 FDA-approved hair loss products out there. Some of you may have tried them before, but probably never at this price. They are up to 90% effective at reducing and stopping further hair loss. The sooner you start using Keeps, the more hair you'll save. So act fast. Many men will even experience hair regrowth with Keeps treatments. Find out why Keeps has more 5-star reviews than any of its competitors, and nearly 100,000 men trust Keeps for their hair loss prevention medication. For a limited time, you can get your first month for free.
That's one hell of a deal for getting to keep your hair. All right. This is how you get the special offer. If you're ready to take action and prevent hair loss, go to keeps.com/CU podcast to receive your first month of treatment for free. That's KEEPS.com/CU podcast. Woo! Keep that hair with Keeps. All right, Ian. You love Namco and Pac-Man.
I do.
He's in middle age like me now.
And Namco has a collection coming out, at least in Japan. There's no announcement of it coming out here yet, called the Namcot Collection. Namcot...
On the Switch.
...was... on the Switch. ...was the name that basically Namco released all of their Famicom releases under. Real quickly, that collection is going to have the NES versions of Pac-Man, Galaga, Tower of Draga, Battle City, Starluster, Family Jockey, Yokai Dochuki, Dragon Spirit, Quinty, which is Mendel Palace, and...
You love that game.
I love Mendel Palace. And Splatterhouse, Wanpaku Graffiti.
Which I was a certain NES Punk review that.
Which is really good.
That's a... That isn't a lot of filler in there, right? I don't know.
This is a pretty good list. I mean, honestly, getting the NES versions of these arcade games, I'm not sure what the benefit really is. But some of these games, like the Splatterhouse Wanpaku Graffiti, were Famicom only. So, I mean, it's the only way you're going to play it. Dragon Spirit was quite different from the arcade version. So, I understand that. But, like...
The jockey game looks fun. It looks cool.
Yeah, but I don't know that I really need to play like the NES version of Pac-Man for comparison. Anyways, that's not the important part. The exciting thing that they're doing is it's going to include a bonus game, and it's going to be an NES remake of Pac-Man Championship Edition. Pac-Man Championship Edition, for those who don't know, it's a series of games now, but it's a time attack-based Pac-Man game. Basically, it shows you a maze. Than the original version. It shows you a maze, and there's dots. When you eat all the dots on... And the entire maze isn't necessarily full. When you eat all the dots on one side, a piece of fruit appears on the other side. When you eat that fruit, the maze literally morphs. It changes on the other side, and a new dot pattern shows up.
Okay.
And you keep going back and forth, and you want to see what... You know, you basically, it's... What kind of score can you get in 5 minutes? You can eat all of the ghosts... basically, so it plays like Pac-Man, but it's constantly changing. It was the reason I bought an Xbox 360. I think I mentioned that when we talked about Pac-Man last week or 2 weeks ago. I actually bought a 360 just for Championship Edition, and it was like the only game I played on it for a month. So, M2, who does great port work. They do a lot of ports for Sega stuff. They actually handled the ports for the... they handled the Sega Genesis Mini. They're doing this collection, and they did a remake of Pac-Man Championship Edition that looks like an NES game.
It's Famicom. But
yeah,
it's
Famicom. they've been working on it for 5 years, and they didn't think it was ever going to see the light of day.
Here's a quote. From M2 director Naoki Hori, explained why the team was able to make an original game like this happen. He said, "Now then, our company is allowed to do everything we want." That's funny. "Regarding the extra championship edition game, it's becoming something big to the point that I don't want to call it an extra game. Originally, this should be sold alone, right? So that as many people would play it as possible. That's exactly the case. So we originally negotiated to port the game to Nintendo 3DS. And afterwards, we've been working on this for around nearly 5 years. When it was still just a 3DS port, we had already put a lot of effort into completely replacing the soundtrack, but for this game, we basically further replaced and remade many things even beyond just the soundtrack. We worked hard to make this a Famicom game on Nintendo Switch where you can move to the rhythm of the music and the graphics. While there are some people who knew about this project beforehand, I bet even they will be surprised at the finished game. I really wanted to release the game no matter what, so I'm glad that we managed to do so even 5 years later." So there you go. So he's making this sound like this is going to be impressive. This is going to be like a 3DS standalone version.
Yeah, this was originally supposed to be a standalone port for the 3DS, and now I don't think this would actually run on an NES cartridge, but they decided to just keep going and it basically make it fit the theme of the collection.
Are we sure about that?
I don't think it's an actual Famicom.
You don't think
that
it's actually coded?
No. Okay.
That would be awesome if you could put it on a cart.
Yeah, holy that would crap. Be awesome, but I don't think that's what it is.
They went because that'd be a little more difficult to go through that.
Yeah, that would be a lot more difficult.
But they kept it with the 8-bit aesthetic and
right. So it fits the collection. So
that's the only thing. I'm not
let's put it this way. Am I surprised that Namco would be like, all right, we have this awesome game that we're going to make you buy a package of games to get it for whatever it is, $25 or whatever it is? No. Would this have been great to be on its own for like a $5 to $10 game? Yes.
Yeah, I totally would have paid $10 for it. But maybe this is the only way they can get it released.
Through Nintendo, you mean? They probably could have put it out on its own.
No, I'm saying M2 and Namco. I'm saying Namco is probably being weird about it here, not M2.
Yeah, well, yeah. It's Namco's decision, obviously. Sure. So Namco's like, oh, well, we can charge $20 and put on these other games and it'll still sell.
Then again, I get it, because I don't think I'd be interested in buying this collection if this wasn't included.
Correct.
Because, like I said, as neat as it is, and I mean, they're good versions, but I don't need to play the Famicom version of Pac-Man, Galaga, Tower of Draga, or Battle City ever again.
I was going to say, is the Famicom version different than the Nintendo?
Those NES ones, version? No, they're not. I mean,
Well, Galaga would be exactly the same, yes.
Yeah,
I thought maybe the Famicom Forever Pac-Man would be
I don't think the Namco version of Pac-Man adds a bunch of options to it.
No, it's bare bones.
So, like I said, you know, it's cool to be able to play Dragon Spirit in a slightly different way. Mendel Palace is a ton of fun. Splatterhouse. It's weird to me that Mendel Palace is on there, because that's not a Namco game. That was Red and Game Freak. Game Freak as in the people who made Pokemon.
Oh, you're right, for the dev.
Yeah. So I have no idea why this game is on here. Maybe Namco published it in Japan, but they weren't. They definitely weren't the devs.
It was Hudson Soft.
Hudson published it here. That's a weird one.
It was Namco in Japan.
Oh, okay.
That happened a lot of times where there was just a totally different publisher.
Well, yeah, because it was Bandai, I believe, published the Galaga port here.
They did that. They did Dragon Spirit.
Yeah.
So I guess it was based upon different relationships for US. That's just how it worked out.
Anyways.
You're right. Game Freak developed it. Wow.
First game they ever worked on. This would be the reason why I buy this collection. So, I mean, it's smart, I guess, in that regard.
Multiplayer on the Switch?
Huh?
If it's multiplayer, you think?
The Championship Edition's not multiplayer. That would be Versus. That's another problem. They haven't released a good version of Pac-Man Verse on anything.
The only thing I'm disappointed of, they have the trailer's great. They don't show in the trailer footage of this Pac-Man Championship. They make it seem like it's a mystery game you get, but we know what it's going to be.
Yeah, they show a screenshot, but that's it.
Like, show me. Like, they're really making you pay to see what this game is like. They don't want footage on YouTube. Damn it, Namco. So how much is it going to be? Between 20 and 25 US, something around
there? I don't know. I would actually guess 30.
It's not 30. The yen is in the trailer here, and I cannot calculate yen directly here.
Ooh, wait a second. That's neat.
Oh, what are you seeing?
Namcot Collection will... Oh, so it's showing that the Namcot Collection will be brought over as the Namco Museum Archives Volume 1 and 2.
Oh.
Especially as it also details the Championship Edition D-Make on the collection. Some of the titles in Wave 1 of the Japanese release have been moved to Volume 2. And it seems the game... for the Volume 2, M2 is working on a brand new Famicom port of Gapless.
What is that game?
And that looks like it's actually going to be...
Is that Galaga Plus?
That's Galaga 3, technically.
Okay.
That would be interesting to see. All right. Anyways.
It's 2,400 yen. What is that in US?
Be about 20 US.
They always round up usually,
that'd
right?
It'd be about 20 US, I think.
Okay. So that's going to come out as a different collection here, 1 and 2.
It's going to come out as two parts, yeah.
But you have to buy both, though, to get the Pac-Man Championship?
No, I think that's going to be in part 1, and Gapless is going to be in volume 2.
Oh, so they're Oh, I see. They're going to do a bonus game like that. That's... All right. Any list of games that are in part 2, or no?
Doesn't say.
Okay. But like I said, the list of games isn't bad. Like, I'm surprised about Splatterhouse. Pocket Graffiti in there. That's a deeper cut, and that's not usually when you think of Namco games, you don't think of that one on top of your head. So, and like I said, the horse one just looks like a goofy, fun game. Hopefully there's not a lot of stuff with the translation that you can play it there. And there's like a side-scrolling action-adventure-looking game. I was never into Tower of Druaga. I do like Galaga.
I love Druaga.
But, you know, we played Galaga 1,000 times. But all right, well, there you go. That's Ian's. I'm happy that Ian's going to be happy for that. That's good. That's good. Yes. A much better value than the Game Gear Micro.
Yes. Much better.
The value.
Moving on.
Ian, tell me about this Sim Refinery thing.
So Sim Refinery was released and caught by the Obscuratory.
The Obscuratory for games unplayed and unknown.
Which is run by, I believe his name is Phil Salvatore?
Salvador.
A really great website. I love reading the Obscuratory. So they got a hold of a prototype of Sim Refinery, which was being worked on by Maxis for Chevron as sort of like an edutainment game to be released. They had...
Build your own refinery.
They were talking about a month ago about how Maxis, you know, did this. And they were talking about Sim Refinery. And on, I think it was...
Well, all the different educational titles. Yes, there was like a spin-off company that was working on different products. Different
games. Like different companies and stuff like that.
Like a health care product. Yep. And there was other ones. Yeah.
So Sim Refinery was one of them. And someone on, I believe it was the message board that I always want to call it NeoGAF. I don't know what it's called what it's called now.
Reset Era?
Reset Era, I think, is what it is. I think it was someone on Reset Era actually had one of the discs. And they sent it off to him. They didn't know what was on it. There was some fear there that, you know, it might have been overwritten with, like, Doom or something like that. You know, they didn't know until they saw it. So, yeah, the disc was backed up and saved, and they streamed a copy. They streamed themselves playing the game, I think, last week. And it's incomplete, but it's still interesting to see that
there's something there. Yeah. So Ars Technica did an article about this a few weeks ago, talking about some of the background.
Yeah, Maxis Business Simulations was the division.
Yeah, it sounds like they bought. Maxis acquired and renamed Delta Logic to Maxis Business Simulations, which operated for 2 years before spinning off to its own company, renamed Thinking Tools Inc. So
I'm sorry, it was Ars Technica where they found someone found the disc.
So, but it sounds like that's what helped dredge it up was talking about this.
Right.
So I was like, oh. I got this thing.
Sure.
That's how this happens. It's great. It's fantastic. I'm wonder if whoever is in the Maxis office somewhere has copies of this somewhere. It'd be great to put these out there, you know, for preservation purposes. Like the healthcare one sounded interesting. I don't know if that one was completed when I was reading about it. Like simulating how, I guess, providing different types of healthcare in the city, how it functioned. It seemed like kind of abstract in a way, but it was interesting from what I quickly read about it. Let's see. It was a shaky business proposition that started. Real Wright once said, I know how pathetic SimCity simulations are really compared to reality. While Hiles finally got the thing, his assistant company, Delta Logic, was sorely missing in a single word, fun. So I guess it was a marriage between a more dry company and Maxis to... Oh, make these a little fun. It won't be 100% real,
fun.
But it'll be fun. People actually want to use these. I mean, you know, where in the world of Carmen San Diego isn't realistic, or Oregon Trail so much.
Sure.
But you know, you're learning as you play, right? So,
looks like Sim Refinery uses some of Sim Farm's assets, which was actually one of my favorite Sim games.
Never played that one.
I loved Sim Farm, Sim Ant, and Sim Tower. Were three that I really, really enjoyed.
And those are three I never played.
You didn't play Cement for the Super Nintendo guidebook?
I didn't review that one. That's probably good old Daniel likes playing those Sim games.
Cement.
He'll be reviewing the Sim City that came out for 64 in Japan.
Oh, nice.
Hopefully there's a translation patch out there to help.
But yeah, it's cool to see this. I find this sort of stuff very interesting. This era of like where video games were tried. Where people tried to use video games for education and business purposes. You know, we've seen it in Japan a couple of times. There was the Master System game that talks about traffic safety that we talked about on
right.
here. And then there was the NES game that was... actually, I think it might have been a refinery or something like that. No, it was like safety protocol working. It was like a safety protocol
game.
Yeah, safety protocol game. So I think that's interesting. And I wonder how much of this is like going on now. How much gamification is actually being done in training?
Well, remember the PC era. PCs were adult products.
Yes,
up until mid '90s, if you want to say even late '90s. Like, they were extremely expensive, obviously, but they are very difficult to use until probably Windows 95. 3.1 a little bit, but like kids could not easily run a computer.
It wasn't until the 2000s, I think, that they became, you know, an everyone thing.
So for a long time, that's why, like, when you look at the most popular computer games up until the mid-90s, they were adult games.
Sure.
Then you got the teenage with Doom, but like all the adventure games and the point-and-click games, they were not marketed towards kids, most of them. And then obviously the text adventure games were adult games. So that was that weird time where, yeah, the average owner of a computer was probably like 40 years old. You know, it wasn't like a young person sort of thing. Let's see. Sim Refinery Prototype was made for a low budget of $75,000. And it's understandably missing features that a higher budget game might have. It was meant to be expanded on if Chevron wanted to continue the project, but it was never adopted within the company and development didn't go any further. I think it's interesting because Chevron, obviously, it's a big company. I don't know if they were that much bigger 30 years ago because I've been watching all these commercial 80s commercial clips, and it's around the San Francisco area too. So many Chevron commercials,
sure,
from these Northern California broadcasts from like the 80s. You know, in the East Coast, we didn't have, I think, a ton of Chevron. It was like Sunoco and Shell.
Yeah, Sunoco.
Definitely Shell was around
Shell
lot.
Was Hess, a lot. Mobile.
Hess was in New Jersey.
Yeah.
Remember Hess, the green one? Mm-hmm. Hess trucks. So I guess oil refineries are localized, or usually makes sense. In a photo published in the San Francisco Chronicle in March 93, several months after the prototype was completed in October 92, you can see a little bit of barely legible text on the computer screen. It lines up with the text on the prototype that says, "Game prototype presented by Chevron and Maxis." If it was this version that they were showing off to the press half a year later, that leads me to believe that Maxis did not continue development past this point. Wow. So it was showed to the press. Hey, everyone, come look at this Sim Refinery game. That's interesting, I guess. A different time, Ian, in the early 90s, I guess. It's possible that Chevron kept working on Sim Refinery on their own without the involvement of Maxis. In a presentation given in 94 at the Foundations of Computer-Aided Process Design Conference, 2 years after the prototype was completed, representatives from UC Davis and Chevron said they were actively trying to bring together the right combination of people to further develop Sim Refinery. This would explain why Bruce Skidmore said he was asked to continue working on the game as late as 98.
Wow.
However, this copy of Sim Refinery is what Maxis Business Simulations was able to complete. So there could be a more different, complete version out there.
Right.
Interesting.
Yeah.
All right, Bruce, where's your copy, Bruce? where do you have it? So you got a map screen, and you have an edit screen, which doesn't work in this version, and then you put together your plant, you build plants. There you go. I guess if you want to learn how the business works and... And they're not going to use this for engineers to learn. They're going to learn that separately. But I guess this is a nice tool to show, I guess, how it operates. Maybe managers? I don't know.
Yeah.
It's interesting. So maybe more of these sim stuff will come out there.
Let's have a little chat here about Fred Chesney, Atari, the VCS. Headline from the Register, written by our pal...
Kieran McCarthy.
I feel like I know him. Kieran McCarthy. Not just its VCS console that's MIA. Atari is a no-show in court, too. Reborn Biz ignores hardware architect's lawsuit over unpaid wages.
Oh, my God.
It's a nice reading headline.
That's more like a long sentence than a headline, but that's how our cheeky Kieran is. Okay, so if you didn't keep up with this before, the main architect originally of the Atari VCS was Rob Wyatt. And he sued Atari.
Yeah, we've brought this up a couple of times, I think.
Because they never paid him for his work or his company for the work on this.
Right.
And this was going to court. I didn't know I realized it was going to court this quickly.
Neither did I.
But I guess there was no settlement or anything like that. So he sued the Iconic Games company in April for failing to pay him months of wages, showing a Colorado court invoices that totaled $261,720. Dollars. That's a lot of money. The company was served with a summons in its U.S. headquarters in Delaware 2 weeks later and failed to respond by a deadline of May 13th. So good old Atari has one of these nice shell Delaware P.O. Box companies going on just to be in the U.S.
Yes.
Isn't that nice? Hey, I wish I could do it because it's a lot cheaper than California having an LLC. I'm not going to deny that. But they do have a U.S. company, so you can sue them here. Interesting. So Wyatt filed for a default judgment against Atari, something that he's likely to receive, given the earlier failure to respond and the legal process required. So this is interesting. So Atari couldn't even muster up getting a lawyer to come and even present at a hearing for this, and are basically throwing in the towel on this. I mean, that's what they're doing.
So I guess that we had talked about this in October. He resigned in October 2019 after saying he hadn't been...
Yes, we did talk about that in October.
After he said he hadn't been paid for 6 months. The guy who, you know, was supposed to turn this into something other than just marketing, bloviating, and bullshit.
Yes, could have made it an actual product.
Yeah, they decided that wasn't important to pay for. You know, an actual product.
And they got their millions of dollars that obviously they could have used to pay him, so that's not an excuse.
Yeah.
You know.
So, I'm not surprised.
They could have probably, if Atari was even sensible, they could have even probably settled for even less than that total amount if they realized, okay, well, we'll keep this out of court. We'll give you, like, whatever, 200 or 225, whatever. And maybe they'd even try to do that. It sounded like we're just going to be lazy and not even show up and then automatically lose for the full amount. Like, this is, I can never picture a real company doing something like this. Because then you're embarrassed on top of it. Because if you're going to pay him anyway, Ian, why not just pay him legally? Then before you have a default judgment against you. Like, this is... Sorry. I'm just flabbergasted by the lack of business sense all the way around. Like, this is like Sega with their game Gear Micro, where it's like, you're not thinking at all about this. Like, you don't give a shit about how your company looks. And you're going to pay out money. Or maybe they think we're in France, so it'll be hard to get our money, but I don't know. This is insane to me that you would not even show up or try to fight this or even negotiate or what have you. You have the money to hire a fucking lawyer to at least negotiate this. I don't get this at all.
Yep. Nope. It's I don't know. Admitting defeat. So the rest of the article is worth a read. It just kind of
goes through the history.
Through the history of this nightmare console so far. Basically talks about how they have repeatedly opened pre-orders because they suspect they have repeatedly run out of funds. As of last week, they are promising, and I feel like this has been promised for a long time now, they are going to have an initial run of 500 consoles available by the middle of this month, supposedly.
And you ask, why shouldn't they have the funds to do all 12,000?
All of them. Because there are nearly 12,000 people who are waiting on the box.
They got $3 million from this.
Yeah.
What was it, 3 years ago? It was 2017, right?
Yeah.
Was it 17 or 18?
It goes all the way back to 17.
It's been 3 years. It was July 2017.
Yep. So, yeah, and just points out that when this does finally hit market, it's going to be underpowered. It's going to rely on a largely unknown game streaming service. That's AntStream. We've talked about AntStream on here before.
When the fuck was this?
It's going to rely on a largely unknown streaming service for anything beyond Atari's own games, and people have to pay for that service.
The same 100 games you can get buying the fucking Raspberry Pi from Micro Center, probably, on there.
So, it's insane, and I think at this point they're just slowly, like, dawdling.
Because... Oh, no, it's only been 2 years. Excuse me, it's been only 2 years since the Indiegogo. It was June 29th, 2018 it ended.
Okay.
They raised $3 million. $3 million.
It's a lot.
The comments are not locked. So you can go to the Indiegogo and look at that fund. There you go. I think people might realize at this point it's just going to be, well, they're going to make 500. How can you run out of money to produce it? That's the whole point of crowdfunding, is that you know what it costs to make this. Did you just blow through this money with hookers and blow, Fred Chenet? Did you? I'm not saying you did. I'm just speculating. How could you go through that money? You're getting other money from other avenues, from whoring out your name for the fucking cryptocurrency casino and the hotel and this Raspberry Pi. You're getting money from different sources. You're probably, from what I hear, they go after, they've gone after like people producing their own Atari shirts, so they're very litigious when it comes to that. So you're getting money somewhere. Make the fucking consoles. Make the 12,000 consoles. Holy shit. What a joke. This is funny. Kieran just this is editorializing end news, but it's great. Despite a successful crowdfunding campaign, Atari didn't have anywhere near the resources to create a console from scratch, and so ended up taking a series of shortcuts that have made the finished version of the VCS, which is yet to ship in a meaningful way 3 years later, not very appealing. When it does finally hit the market, it will be underpowered and will rely on a largely unknown game streaming service for anything beyond Atari's games, a service that users will have to pay extra for. There are no outside developers on board and no ports of popular games. Atari has repeatedly reopened for pre-orders, many suspect because it has repeatedly run out of funds. And as things stand, last week promised that it will have an initial run of 500. There are, however, nearly 12,000 increasingly angry netizens who have paid as much as 400 for each box. The fact that Atari is heading into a default judgment in a lawsuit brought by the bloke tasked with creating the console, it didn't even respond to the allegations, is just one sign that the Atari VCS is destined for the dustbin of history. No comment from Atari was received at time of publication. That cheeky Kieran.
Oh, it's crazy.
I wonder what happens if they don't come out with these 12,000. I wonder what will happen. You think that if you don't come out with this 12,000, that there'll be, obviously, everyone will be reporting on this, and then no one will hopefully do a business with Atari, and the name doesn't mean anything, obviously.
Right.
Those games have been re-released so many times, I don't even think those games have any value anymore, individually.
No.
Those 2,600, I mean, they've been
No, they can't possibly.
I mean, I should have bought those the rights to Atari. I mean, like, how much could it have possibly cost at the time? Well, let's put it this way. If they try to sell us eventually, I just think the value will just be less and less. It's never going to be the same again.
No.
You know, we're fucking 45 years into the existence of Atari, for God's sakes. You know, it was 74, 75. Holy shit. With Pong and everything. My God. All right, anything else to add from our cheeky Kieran McCarthy?
No.
All right. Ian, we have a scumbag.
Seller, we do.
Of the week. Yes, we do, Ian. Look at the topic list.
I'm looking at the topic list.
It's under Scumbag Seller of the Week. Our Scumbag Seller of the Week is, wow, hard to pronounce this name here. It's BE881920. It sounds like an android from Star Wars there. And they are Scumbag Seller of the Week, Ian, because they are selling medium flat rate
boxes,
United States Priority Service mailboxes,
the ones that you can just go to the post office and grab off the rack,
the ones that they can ship you for free. Priority mail packages or boxes are free, the envelopes are free to use, and it's selling these for one box, Ian. Only one on eBay. Oh, you get 25.
No, you get 25 of them.
Okay, you get 25 flat rate boxes for $5. So what this tells me is I don't think this person actually has these on hand. They are going to drop ship you.
Yeah. Yep.
They're going to say, okay, what idiot is going to pay me $5? They're going to give me their address.
I'm going to go to the post.
To literally go online, go to the request page, and put it in their address and send it to them.
Yep.
I don't think this is I think this is against terms of service. I don't think you're allowed to be drop shipping on eBay. You have to own the items you sell on eBay. I'm pretty sure that's a terms of service thing. You cannot drop ship. You can't take pre-orders on eBay. I know that. That's supposedly
right.
This is drop shipping. Drop shipping.
Yeah, more than 10 available.
Yes, there's a billion available because it's the post office.
I was just saying, this guy doesn't have 2,500 boxes just chilling.
I use these boxes myself, and they work very well. Up to 70 pounds, great for shipping. Wow. I understand times can be tough out there. You want to make a living. This is really bad.
Yeah, this isn't the hustle.
Unless this person really had all these shipped to their house, but then he'd have to reship them back out, and it's free shipping. So, no, that's not what's happening here.
Right.
Because unless he's thinking, I'm going to do you a favor. I'm going to just send these for free, basically. But I don't think you could ship priority mailboxes flat rate priority. I don't think that's how it works. It's like a priority inception. I don't think that's how it works. This is probably drop shipping happening here. This is balls to do this.
Yeah.
And they sold, unfortunately, sold
two. They've sold two so far.
They've sold two.
So this person's made $10.
I'd love to see who bought these and call them out. I would love to see that. One has 590 ratings, so that's a real person at least. It happened June 4th. The other person was on May 23rd.
This person is new at this too. They only have four feedback. Yeah.
Well, they were all for selling or buying. No, they're for buying. Oh no, a couple were for they sold the Peak Life Somnipure PM Minor Pain Management 90 capsules and the Optics Care iLoo Plus plus Hydralon for dog, cat, horses pack of 3. So they've got some maybe new old stock of some supplies of some sort.
Yeah.
And now they're selling
eye lubricant.
They're selling older Bayer Citrical Maximum Plus coated caplets. They're selling that, and they're also selling a new mirror dash cam for your car. I guess one of those with a touchscreen. I'm interested in seeing about this. I'd love to have a little touchscreen put in my car there. So this is interesting. We haven't done a Scumbag Cell of the Week in a while because we're just running into the same sort of repro boxes and retro pies with games installed on it. It's really hard to make our list of a Scumbag
Cell
of the Week. I mean Sega probably should have with the Game Gear Micro, but
selling free boxes is definitely a good way.
Free boxes that
is a good way to get us.
You're not shipping.
Anya.
Okay. When will people figure out if they buy this? And hey, this is not coming from this person who's from Indiana. This is coming from whatever the nearest postal service is to ship me the boxes. You know, whatever the nearest regional center is probably shipping me these boxes to out.
Right.
That's who's probably doing this. This is nuts. USPS box request, priority box request. I feel like I should put it in the comments section here and do it. Yeah, even if you go to like stamps.com, you can get it from there. Yeah, there's a shipping supply. There's a USPS store where you get it. Yes, you go on you go, Ian, oh, dual use priority mailbox, pack of 10 or 25. The cost, Ian, is $0 and 0 cents. You can get the military care kit. 6 boxes, tape and labels. $0 and 0 cents.
How many cents? 0 cents as well?
Double 0 cents.
Wow.
The only thing they charge for, looks like, is like a postal scale. All right. Okay, USPS, I love you. Don't close my account. It's really highway robbery to charge $73 for a USB commercial scale. Those are like 15, 20 bucks on eBay for something that goes at least 100 pounds, like, or less, $10. So that's bad.
Well, when they're giving you all those delicious
free
boxes for free.
Yes, but now I want to look up how much a 330-pound scale actually costs. 330-pound, it's not $73. If it is, mail scale, postal scale. Yes, you can buy one for $34, a 330-pound digital scale. So, okay, they have margin on some things of the USPS. I do know that, like, when you go into, you know what the biggest thing that pissed me off? You go in, you got to buy that little crappy packing tape that's awful. That little,
oh yeah,
they charge like $3-4 for that little thing, when you can buy the big hunk of roll with the professional, what were they called, the with the big handle, that's real packing tape.
Yes,
like that doesn't cost as much as they charge for that little shitty thin 3M stuff. That's what annoys me at the post office. But yes, if you want mailing envelopes, the flat rate padded envelope is even free to get a pack of, but then you got to pay the higher priority mail.
Right, exactly.
That's how they get you. It's like the free salad and breadsticks. They they fill you up on the free stuff, and then you got to pay, that's how they get you there. Yeah. Everything is free here. You can get the Cremated Remains Human Kit 2 for free. You can get, yes,
oh,
this is a thing.
Right.
You get the one box, you get the, how is this a thing? You don't get an urn. What do you get? One box priority mail express tape bubble cushion self-sealing plastic bag. What? That's a thing. I didn't make that up. I did not make up the Human Remains Kit priority mail. I did not make that up.
I mean, I guess you'd need them. I mean, they exist.
But how is that distributed in a flat rate box unless there's like a special little like container you put it in? Little like Folgers coffee can? a size thing? No, that's insane. But, you know, I guess if you're looking for human remains and it comes up in a search, human remains, what's the kit one then? What is the kit one? Oh, the kit one is just a much bigger box, I guess, if you get like a much bigger person's remains. Oh, it's a special box that says cremated remains. Oh, it's a special, maybe because it's toxic that you're transferring?
I guess.
Sorry. Anyway, we're getting off topic here. The fact of the matter is, don't drop ship stuff off of eBay. That's against terms of service. That might have happened to me when I ordered I unfortunately ordered the TurboGrafx Mini from Amazon Japan, and then 3 weeks later it comes out in the US for $100. So I'm out $60 by paying a drop shipper on eBay. That's my fault, because they said it wasn't going to come out till December, and then it was available everywhere. That's on me. That's my fault. I wouldn't blame that scumbag. So that's on me. I knew they were going to be a drop shipper, even though they didn't say that. It was labeled from Japan when I got it. But anyway, all right. So BE881920 for drop shipping free priority mailboxes. You are the scumbag seller of the week, Ian.
Patrick,
we have a Patreon topic, Ian.
We do.
How do you access the Patreon?
I was going to ask you the very same thing. You go to patreon.com/CU podcast.
You get a hangout once a month with Ian. Maybe
a hangout once
a week or two. You get a writing. Hopefully once a week.
You get just talked about the club, them clubhouse games,
and you get to vote on the Patreon poll every week. In third place, what was your favorite thing about the start of summer, and were you a beach kid? 19%, surprisingly low. Maybe we'll get back to that in the future. Second place, what were your favorite book series growing up or recently? Our patrons can't read. 24%, they don't are interested in that. And number one.
Why are you are weirdly what? Against the book one.
I don't want the book topic Why? To come out. Now they're going to vote for it. Because I don't have a lot to say about recently, about what I've read or anything.
Growing up.
That's true.
Growing up.
I talk about the Hardy Boys.
Question.
And number one, what games have you put the most hours into at 56%? Ian, that's with a bullet.
So I've been thinking about that, and there's a lot that I've put a lot of time into. Some are obvious to me. Some I have to like think and go, okay, over my lifetime I've probably put a lot into these. So just games, like the nice thing about modern games is they generally keep track of how long you've been playing.
Oh, like
them.
Steam?
Yeah, like Steam or the Switch does it. Some games do it on the PS4. But at least as far as like recent stuff in recent memory goes, No Man's Sky is a game I've put hundreds of hours into.
Hundreds?
Yeah. Probably 200 to 300.
Over the past few, what came out, 4 years ago?
Yeah, probably about 4 years. Yeah, 2016. I realize that's not as crazy as like some people, but for me to put 300 hours into a game is a lot. Mario Kart 8 is also a game that I have put a lot of time into. If you were to add up the amount of hours I put into the Wii U version and the Switch version, I've probably put about 150, 200 hours into Mario Kart 8.
I'd probably put at least 100 hours into both combined.
I would say probably 200. That's a game that I keep going back to, and that's like where I start to realize, okay, I'm really like putting some time into these games is like, yeah. I just keep going back to them over time. I pick Mario Kart back up for like another 10 to 15 hours like every 3 months, and it keeps adding.
It's a brilliant game. I mean, how can they perfect that game? I guess I could, but like, holy shit.
I was talking about
everything.
It the other day. Mario Kart is a game that I don't know that I actually like, because the entire time that I'm playing it, I fucking bitch about how unfair it is. But I always go back.
What's unfair about it? With the items?
Maybe? Just like the rubber banding AI and stuff like that. But I like it. I always joke and say that it's a very fancy dice rolling simulator. I mean, there's obviously skill involved, but there's a lot of luck involved in Mario Kart too.
If you know how to drive properly, you're going to do well, though.
Yeah, but you're still going to get...
You have to use items properly.
If you're skillful, yes, and you use items properly, you're always going to finish in the top four or the top five. You're not always going to get first place.
Not against humans, no. It's because people are too close to skill, and there is a little bit of randomness. Absolutely. No, you're right about that. It's not just dice throwing. It's not yacht.
No, that's why it's joking. I'm joking. But I think when I think about games that I've really put the most time in, Fire Pro Wrestling.
The newer one, or just one single game? We're talking about series.
Series as a whole, but I could easily say Fire Pro D and Fire Pro R. in Fire Pro G, honestly, all three of those games probably got probably have a couple hundred hours at least in each one.
I didn't play as much as the PlayStation one. Was it G?
G was on the PlayStation emulator. One.
I didn't play as much as that as I played Six Man Scramble on the Saturn, which I obviously played a lot of that with my Disco Inferno creator wrestler.
So I don't talk a lot about like when I was really into wrestling, but my friend Jay, my friend Galen, and my friend Dan and I would get together once a week, every week, for years, for probably 3 years in there when I was still living in Buffalo before I moved out here, and it was when tape trading was still a big deal.
Sure.
So, and I didn't really buy tapes, but Dan and Jay definitely bought tapes, and Galen would buy some too. Jay was very into Toriumon and Dragon Gate. As a matter of fact, my friend Jay is now he's the guy who runs all the English language Dragon Gate stuff, like officially. He actually works for them now. But we would get together every week. We would they would all, you know, get their new tapes. They'd all pick some matches. We'd all watch probably like 2 hours of wrestling, and then we'd sit around and we'd play every week. We'd play whatever version of Fire Pro is current for like two, if not more, hours.
What was your favorite version? Would you like D better than G?
D is my favorite sentimentally, but because it was Dreamcast as well. I'm a big fan of G as well, though, because that was what I really like sunk most of my time in.
G really expanded the moves.
Yes,
a lot more. I remember, I'll never forget this as long as I live, because I loved Benoit back then. He was one of my favorite wrestlers. The Crippler Crossface had a bug in that game. Mm-hmm. You could not submit. You remember that?
Yep.
For some reason, I remember that. But G was when they started putting new moves on your card to put it on your PlayStation, too. I believe that's when they did that.
I don't believe so.
Really? I thought they did that on G.
I don't believe they did that with G. They did that with D.
Was it D, not G?
D, they released new moves. What they did in D was they held a vote. And they released, I think it was like 16 or 20 new moves for the game. And there was a service. And basically, yeah, you would download it onto your VMU. And we would get all the new moves.
I'm trying to go back to old fucking forums from like 2001, too, to see if there was move packs back then.
No, there weren't any move packs for G. I can promise you there were not move packs for G.
I'm confusing it with that.
There were moves added to D. That was the first time they added any sort of moves. I have, you know, just alone, you know, I have probably 400 hours into
one of the Fire Pros
into D, G, and R. I think honestly that's probably the game I've spent the most time playing. And there was a point in time where I played DuckTales every day when I got home from school.
And would never though equal Fire Pro.
It would never equal Fire Pro. No, but that was one that I played a lot. I would get home and I'd play DuckTales every single day when I was in high school. I'd get home and I'd play DuckTales once or twice through almost every single day. So lots of time.
This is how I broke this down.
Lots of time in that too.
Games that took a lot of time at first. Games that you repeatedly play a lot.
Sure.
Or short games like NES, where as a kid, I had Jaws. You know, I'd probably play Jaws for like, 20 hours.
Right.
Like what human would do that? Because, each game would take like, half hour, 40 minutes, whatever. But you play them a lot. I don't think as much as I play Contra or as much as I play Super Mario Brothers, there's no way the amount of time would even get close to some of these computer games that I played.
Yeah,
just no,
absolutely.
No feasible way, because these are not games that take hours and hours to complete. I mean, some NES games do, like Legend of Zelda, it'll take you a few hours.
By the time I got good at DuckTales, I mean, an average run was no more than 15 minutes. You know, that's very... that's how long a Fire Pro match takes.
if Rampage... on the Master System, I think he's beeping. If Rampage on the Master System would take you 2 hours, I ain't going to play that more than once.
Yeah.
I remember playing that in the Master System, so that's the only game I have besides the built-in Alex Kidd Miracle World on the Master System too, which, God, the more I think about Alex Kidd, I don't like it. Reviewed that game too. I would not go back to those games.
Sure.
Like Top Secret Episode I owned, but like I could only get, an hour in before I got stuck, and that was it.
Sure.
Then I'd be discouraged from playing it again. But once you get to the computer and you get the games like playing like, you know, X-Wing and TIE Fighter, just doing those campaigns takes several hours to get through that. And some of those escort missions are very difficult. So those games could take you 20 hours to play through.
Yeah.
Now you're starting to get into these games that are a lot longer. Like playing a game like Space Quest, or those don't take that long to get through, but these games that have campaigns, yes. And then when you start to get into games like, you know, like obviously Unreal, and then get to college, you're playing multiplayer. Now we're talking a lot of time. So to me, I thought about it. I said, how much should I play Civilization 2? I played that game for like 8 hours a day one summer, which you're talking, you know, let's just say that summer, whatever that was, 96 that summer, somewhere around there. We're talking, because you're not playing Doom 8 hours a day. You know, you're not doing that. So we'll just play, well, not 8 hours, we'll play 6 hours a day. 6 times 30, 180 times three. That's like 500 hours. I probably play 500 hours of, let's just say 400 hours, something like that. I probably play 300 to 400 hours of Civ 2. I'm not sure that's the most I played. I might have played Unreal Tournament 2004 more than that in the 2000s, mid-2000s. I was in a clan. I did a lot of, I was in tournaments with like assault mode, and those sessions would go easily. Each session could go 4 hours. And we're talking playing that game for years, like 3 years. That game was popular, probably, with the add-ons and the TAM add-on. So I would probably say between, like, Civilization 2 is up there for sure. And then maybe there's an NES game. I'd probably get into the 100-hour from repetitiveness, but it'd be hard to think of one that I played that much to get to 100 hours. And then Unreal Tournament 2004, probably more than Unreal Tournament 99, more than original Unreal, I probably played the most of any game the more I think about it. That game became like playing that game almost every day for a while.
Right.
At least a couple hours each time. Like that probably within 1 year surpassed any summer of me killing my life and my reading list to Civ 2, which probably wasn't 6 hours a day. It was probably 4 hours a day.
Sure.
So anyway, that was, I think about that a lot. Because I said, yeah, NES games you go back to a lot, or even Super Nintendo games, there's no way I'm playing these NES games for 400 hours. They're impossible. Not even if it's fucking Nobunaga's Ambition, that's not going to happen. You're not going to do that. So that was a good Q&A.
It was.
Better than reading.
No. I could go off on reading.
No, I like to read. I got to read more. I got to read more Ludlum. With the ba 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 titles.
Yes.
Ba 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 ba. Anyway, is that it for the CU podcast? You done?
That's it. I'm done. It was a good one. It was a long one.
Hour 40?
I was going to say hour and 36. Hour and 40.
Right, probably close to hour 36, but yeah, this was fun. Again, I have a Cameo started up, cameo.com/Pat Contry. If you want me to do a personalized message or birthday greeting or breakup or congratulations on graduation. Well, that's hard to say. Then all net proceeds after Cameo's cut this month, I will donate to American Civil Liberties Union, ACLU, there, which are helping out lots of different areas with stuff going on. Yeah. And then I still got to finish editing the new NES Punk video, and my heart obviously has not been into it. I shot it 2.5 weeks ago, and I'm like, I just don't feel like doing it.
It was one of those things where at the time it was a...
It's like, oh, I'm going to edit this, get that out in a few days, then all hell breaks loose. And you're like, oh, Jesus. You know, but I'll get it out there. I'll get it out before spoilers, before Pac-Man turns 41. That's why I didn't put a date on it. I learned the Christmas episodes. I didn't say, well, Christmas just happened. No, right. Oh, Pac-Man turned 40 recently. It's like recently.
Sure.
It's like, you know, it's not, it has to be timely. There. All right, that's Ian. I'm Pat. That's my hair taking over my body. We'll see you later.
Bye.